Thank you, Jerry. And we will take it from here. Phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. A lot of hindsight in John Gibbons' decision to go with Brett Cecil with the tying run on in the bottom of the eighth after Roberto Osuna struck out the first two hitters and then gave up a bloop single to Evan Longoria. David DeJesus, the lefty, was coming up. No righties on the bench. And while Brett Cecil has never been a lefty killer, by no means has Brett Cecil ever been a lefty killer, David DeJesus doesn't hit left-handed pitching. Hit 143 against him last year. I'm looking for a year where there was a decent sample size of DeJesus at-bats. 161. The year before. So he hasn't hit left-handed pitching. 149 the year before that in a long, long time. And he hit a ground ball and he hit to the right spot and it got through. And then Miguel Castro came in to give up a two-run double on his first pitch. Pardon me, an RBI double on his first pitch and a two-run double to the next batter on a 3-0 pitch. And the Blue Jays lose it. Second blown save of the career for Castro. And the phone lines are open. We'll get to a call quick before we have to say goodbye to the network, but we will have continued Blue Jays talk right up till 10 o'clock Eastern time. Mike is in Kirkfield. You're going to lead things off on Blue Jays talk. Welcome aboard.
Thanks, Mike. How are you doing today?
I'm all right, thank you. Go ahead.
Good. When is John Gibbons going to learn to leave things alone sometimes? Sometimes he does not have to make a move. Osuna should not have been pulled out of that ballgame. He had complete control, struck out the first two batters. He brings in, instead of bringing in Cecil, if he leaves Osuna in, okay, Laurie got our...
Longoria.
Yeah, he got a bloop single.
Yep.
Big deal. Big deal. Leave Osuna in there. It's not going to hurt. You bring in Cecil, who really hasn't, you mentioned earlier, he hasn't been very good against left-handers in his career, by no means.
No. That's not true. I said he wasn't a lefty killer.
Yeah, okay.
But he's been fine.
Yeah, but still.
He's not a guy that you would ever be afraid to use.
Not afraid to use, but Osuna was pitching well enough. I mean, the only contact made off Osuna was a bloop single by Loria.
Longoria. I don't know why he gives you that much fun.
Yeah. And, I mean, he did the same thing to Norris. It's the only contact. And if your best hitter on the other team is only making that kind of contact, why not leave him in for the last out?
Look, it's a defensible position that John Gibbons should have left Roberto Osuna in. And it's a defensible position that you go to Brett Cecil now that you've got the tying run on base and you got a guy who can't hit left-handed pitchers on the bench or coming up with no options on the bench. I really think you go either way on that one. And John Gibbons, I'm not going to say went the wrong way. It wasn't Gibbons who gave up the hit. Brett Cecil didn't get his lefty. And that's, you know, what he's supposed to do. Brett Cecil's supposed to get outs late in games. He got the ground ball, and it got through. And that was unfortunate. And then Miguel Castro gave up two very, very loud hits. And maybe you back off from Castro a bit right now. That's two tough outings in a row for him. 20 years old, he looked so good all spring and early on. Maybe Osuna gets a shot. Either way, you're still relying on a 20-year-old. This was not John Gibbons' fault. There's no way to say, well, if he'd left Osuna in, it would have been fine. Because there's no way to know that. Osuna was pitching well, but he'd given up the hit. And, as you know, if you want to say I was just a bloop hit, well, I was just a little ground ball that Cecil gave up. We will continue to take your phone calls all the way till 10 o'clock Eastern on our flagship station, Sportsnet 590 The Fan and sportsnet.ca/590. Blue Jays lose it, 4-2 to the Rays. It's the Honda Post Game Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Back to Blue Jays baseball faster than Dalton Pompey can steal second. Well, almost as fast. Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The block button on Twitter getting a workout today when the Blue Jays lose a game late. That's the kind of thing that happens for some strange reason. Blue Jays fall 4-2. to the Tampa Bay Rays. Two out, nobody on in the bottom of the eighth inning. And the Rays rally for three runs. Bloop hit by Evan Longoria. Ground ball single by David DeJesus. And then back-to-back loud doubles by James Loney and Tim Beckham. The last two hits off of Miguel Castro, his second blown save of the season. So the Blue Jays will go to work tomorrow and try to avoid the brooms of the Tampa Bay Rays. They're already assured their third series loss of the season. Mark Burley, 3-0 in three starts, gets the ball for the Blue Jays. The Jays have scored over a dozen runs a game for him. It will be Chris Archer on the hill for the Rays, so going to be awfully tough to score in double digits. We're on the air 12:30 p.m. Eastern for a 1:10 first pitch. You've been listening to Home Hardware Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Home Hardware. Homeowners helping homeowners with expert advice. For Jerry Howard, Joe Siddle, Tom Young, Derek Brandeo, Frank Head, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night.
Lean back, crack a cold one, and listen to the game. Sure, even if you are at work. This is Toronto Blue Jays Baseball on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Ball dropped by Martin. He struck him out. Russ flips it down to first, and now the inning is over. So Norris rewards John Gibbons with his patience and perseverance. What does he do? He strikes out Guyer with the tying run at second base. Daniel Norris, happy birthday, young man. You're 22, and you probably are riding a cloud from the mound of that third base Blue Jays dugout.
Yeah, tremendous outing by Daniel Norris on his 22nd birthday, but couldn't get a win. The Blue Jays had a 2-1 lead thanks to Russ Martin's game-tying home run in the top of the seventh inning. But in the bottom of the eighth with two out and nobody on, four straight, Tampa hits one off of Roberto Osuna, one off of Brett Cecil, two off of Miguel Castro, and the Blue Jays wind up on the wrong side, falling 4-2, and Tampa has a chance at the sweep tomorrow. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Blue Jays Talk. We're taking your calls at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance, 1-888-666-0590. To your phone calls we go. Jen in Toronto.
Hello, Mr. Wilner. Good game. Educate me.
Okay.
Are we saving Osuna for tomorrow? Like, I mean, he got two strikeouts. Longoria thing, they're playing deep, like no doubles, blah, 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 blah. What are we saving him for? The man has pinpoint control. He looks in control. The second they brought Cecil in, or whatever, I didn't understand it. It's like, if it were me, I'm not Gibbons, but I would have maybe even left him in and left him in the ninth and left Cecil and Castro for tomorrow. It was just, you could just see it. Like, I texted my friends and said, oh, here goes the game.
Well, yeah, but you know what? You did that the last time Brett Cecil came into a game, right?
No,
I mean, I get dozens of tweets.
It wasn't about Brett Cecil. It was more about Castro. It's not even about the two of them. It's about the fact that Osuna looks so composed. And
Cecil looked pretty composed, too. He just gave up a ground ball
to get a note.
I'm sorry. When you talk while I'm answering you, I can't hear what
you're
saying.
Okay, you go.
Cecil looked incredibly composed as well. And he gave up a ground ball. And it got
Osuna,
through.
I don't know why we took him out.
Well, like I said to the last caller, you've got a left-hander coming to the plate who doesn't hit left-handers at all.
I know he has a very bad record.
Right.
But Osuna, I mean, Longoria has been hitting well. And
well, what does that have to
I don't know. But another thing is Encarnacion. I know he gets a slow April start, but he has got to start cashing in something, or else they're going to have to adjust, because it's frustrating watching him. And I know he's wonderful, and he heats up in May, and blah, 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 but he has been a liability with Josh Donaldson and Devin Travis hitting so well. It's almost annoying, and he's not even trying to hit the right field, or I know he's got some good home runs, but I'm just saying, as a 162-game viewer, it gets annoying.
Okay. Appreciate the call. They're still leading the major leagues in runs scored. So I understand that it's annoying that Edwin's not hitting. And, yeah, but guys are going to go through slumps. There's no reason to believe that Edwin's not going to come out of it and not going to wind up the season being one of their best hitters. Unfortunately, you know, you can't know, even with his history of poor Aprils, you can't know ahead of time when someone's going to struggle and adjust your lineup accordingly. You don't want Edwin batting eighth on the day that he hits two homers and, you know, goes 3-for-5 with a double and two home runs. He's a guy who should be and who has earned the middle of the order and should stay there. You know it's going to come around sooner or later. As far as taking out Osuna goes, look, if you're going to call me, not just the last caller, but if you're going to call to say, oh, as soon as they took Osuna out, I knew the Jays were going to lose the game. I want you to know that every single time a reliever not named Castro or Osuna has come into a game for the Blue Jays this season, I've gotten at least a dozen tweets saying that's it, the game is over. And far more often than not, you're wrong. Every once in a while, you're going to be right. If you want to hate the bullpen and pretend that every time a reliever comes in, they're going to lose, but then only call me when they actually do, that's your prerogative. So don't tell me you knew it was over. Because, again, I'm sure the last time Cecil came into the game, you knew it was over too, and he got the job done. And the time before that, he got the job done. And the time before that. Time before that, he didn't. Scott is in Sudbury. Hello, Scott.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling.
So we don't need to dwell on the points the previous callers mentioned, but, you know, I agree Osuna was clearly cruising. And, you know, how many times do we, you know, you call in Cecil and he gets the lefty out? My question really
far
is...
Far more often than not, right?
Sorry, what?
Far more often than not.
Exactly, but right. You never hear about it. No one's calling in to tell you that.
Yeah, that's true.
However, my question is about actually sample sizes. So I think Jerry had mentioned that Jesus was like 1-for-6 lifetime against Cecil.
I can check on that. I can tell you that DeJesus has hit about 140 against lefties over the last 5 years, regardless of the Cecil stuff. But I'll look that up for you.
Like you said, though, he's poor.
He's awful.
I guess, how much do you start to look into these sample sizes? Because it's such a small sample, really, Mike, right?
Like yeah, 1-for-6 doesn't
matter.
1-for-7,
I'm pretty sure it was.
He was, you're right, 1-for-6 with a strikeout. That doesn't mean a thing. It doesn't mean a thing. I mean, it could have been in, he could have gone 0-for-4 in a game Cecil started a few years ago. It just, I mean, when do you start to look at that? I don't know, 50? And even that. I mean, if somebody is like 8-for-9 against you with 5 home runs, then I think you want to stay away from him. Just the same way as if he's 0-for-9 against you and you've struck him out 7 times. I mean, it doesn't guarantee that it's going to happen, but there's an abundance of evidence even with a short sample. But for most of those matchups, the ones that aren't overwhelming one way or another, I think 50 at bats maybe tells you something, maybe.
Okay. Related to that, so Miguel Castro's had 2 bad outings now back-to-back. How long is his leash, do you think, if you're Gibbons, and how, are we going to overreact to 2 bad outings in a row? I'm sure Gibby wanted to get him back in there, get him back, to pitching well. Just what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's been 2 bad outings in a row where he's gotten hit really, really hard, like really hard. The home run by Manny Machado was destroyed, although weak contact from the next guy and a strikeout from the next guy. Maybe it was more of a line drive from Steven Pierce. And today, those 2 doubles were hit awfully hard. So, you know, he's 20 years old. He's in his 3rd week in the major leagues. I don't think you're overreacting if you say, all right, let's give him a bit of a breather now and see if he gets back to pitching the way he was in the spring. I would not mind at all if the Blue Jays had a late lead tomorrow if Roberto Osuna got the opportunity to close it, although it's back-to-back days for him. But He didn't throw that many pitches today. I wouldn't think it would be an overreaction to take the job away from Castro. But that said, you know, it's makes it easier with the Blue Jays not having a capital C closer. You don't have to worry about ruffling any feathers. You know, you don't have to worry about really anything except putting the best guy in the best spot to get you the win.
Definitely. And just last point before I go, I couldn't agree with you more just in terms of the age of both, you know, Castro and Asuna. The last caller, you know, they were really ragging on the bullpen. And, you know, like, let's look back to last year and just think about how bad our bullpen was. And now we have these two young arms who, you know, are just oozing with talent. But like you said, they just don't have the seasoning and the experience yet. So thanks for taking my call, Mike.
All right. Appreciate the call. Blue Jays lose it 4-2 to the Tampa Bay Rays. Couple of soft hits get a rally going, then a couple of loud ones off of Miguel Castro finish it off. His second career blown save. Mark in Richmond Hill, you're up next on Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Evening, Michael.
Hello.
Little bit of positive twist on this. The birthday boy looked amazing tonight. It's great to see.
He was very, very, very good, Daniel Norris. And it was, you know, people talking about sending him down yesterday and
unbelievable.
Pulling the leash and stuff, but he was outstanding.
I don't know how you do it, Mike. I really don't.
Look, you know what?
Some of these calls.
The deal is the game. I'm the guy when the game just finished, nobody's thinking rationally, win or lose. You know, there hasn't been any time for sober second thought by the time people pick up the phone and call me. And that's the fun part.
I'm glad you're enjoying it. It's fun listening from this side. What when Jose comes back?
Who knows?
Who do you put? Pardon?
Who knows?
I don't know. But when he does,
yeah. But who knows what'll be going on when he does? Right. Remember last week, everyone kept calling me and asking what would happen when Saunders came back. Who knew Batista would be on the shelf?
But if all four are healthy,
okay.
It depends who's pitching. But what do you see the outfield as the starting three?
Or
would it depend who's pitching?
I think we're going to see Pompey and Pilar shifting in and out with Pompey getting the bulk of the playing time. That's what I think. Now,
and Pilar would be in center field when Pompey is
not
playing?
Yeah, either one of them will play center field. Yeah.
Good scenario.
Yeah, I mean, things could change very rapidly. I like Pompey's approach at the plate a lot more than I like Pilar's. But Pilar's defense has been outstanding.
And to let you go, though, Mike, but on a positive outlook, only 16 home runs for Russell Martin to hit 20 this year, my man.
17.
You said 12. I'm taking 20.
Okay.
So he's hit four?
He's at three.
Is he? All right.
Yeah. He's at three. All right. I would be surprised, but you never know. Thank you for the
call.
All right.
Great job, Mike.
All right. Appreciate it. And since we just mentioned Michael Saunders and Russ Martin, and Dalton Pompey, point out again, this is the first time in history that three starting position players in a game on the same team have been Canadian. Fourth time ever that there have been three Canadians in the starting lineup for a team, but the first time it's been three position players, and that's very, very cool. Alan in Toronto, welcome to Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Mike. You win some, you lose some. It was a tough one. In the sixth inning, Josh Donaldson, was that a stolen base or was that called infield indifference? There was not a throw, was there?
No, it was a stolen base.
Because there was some resistance. I guess it's only infield indifference when there's no resistance, but since Longoria was running to third, I guess there was some resistance.
It's actually called defensive indifference, but I mean, if the other team is just more than it doesn't, there doesn't have to be a throw or anything. If the other team is just more than happy to let you take the base, and usually it only happens in the ninth inning or in a blowout where the runner doesn't matter. You're never going to see defensive indifference called on a sixth inning stolen base.
Gomes' pocket was picked in. He was caught napping.
Shift was on too. Longoria was playing basically in the shortstop position, and Donaldson saw it and saw he could beat him to the bag, no matter what Gomes did. So It was a confluence of events that led to a very, very easy stolen base.
And he's a risk taker, Donaldson. You know, he's not known for his speed, but he's a very smart base runner. Kind of reminds me of Raul Mondesi. I remember in 2002, Raul Mondesi was constantly doing that kind of thing, and he actually stole home in 2002.
I remember Mondesi stealing home, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't seen enough of Josh Donaldson to decide what kind of base runner he is yet, but that was definitely a very, very smart play by him.
And Pillar made a rookie mistake in the seventh inning, a high chopper to the plate. You know, it was in fair territory. You've got to run on anything. You know, you just don't take anything for granted. And, it's, you know, I hope he learns by his mistake there.
Thanks, Alan. It was a bunt. And if you're going to bunt, run. High chopper, bunt, whatever. That wasn't a rookie mistake. That was just dumb. Run, period. And that's something that you hope he learns from, to the extent that it never happens again. You put the ball on the ground, you run, period. Earl in Toronto. You're up next on Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Good evening, Earl.
How you doing, Mike?
Oh, doing all right.
Well, Mike, I'm going to tell you something. I sit and listen to all the games. I have not, just hear me out. I have not played sports for 18 years because I'm blind.
Okay.
Tomorrow, Mike, I'm going out to buy a hockey helmet because I'm banging my head against the wall with something that you said. How can you sit here while you're talking to all the Blue Jays fans and say it's not John's fault?
Because it's not.
The ball from the pitcher.
Yeah.
Changed the order.
Yeah.
And guess what happened? A rookie manager.
What?
A rookie manager.
Yeah.
Counteracted what John Gibbons hasn't been able to do, is beat Tampa Bay or Houston in the last 2-3 years. He countered our manager's pulling of a pitcher that, like, they're all saying is out of a blue pit. How can you say, like, to fans, and where you, my head's on straight, how can you tell us that it's not John Gibbons' fault?
Because it's not John Gibbons' fault. First of all, he knew that pinch hit was going to happen. Everybody in the ballpark knew that James Loney was going to pinch hit for Logan Forsythe. He brought in Brett.
Why did he bring in Cecil?
He brought in Castro.
Oh, I'm sorry. I meant the one with Cecil.
He was not outmaneuvered by Kevin Cash on the Brett Cecil thing.
Well,
there was no pinch hit.
Yeah, but did the guy not get a hit?
Yeah.
So then it's like playing cards. The guy that has the best hand wins. The rookie manager brought somebody else up to bat.
No, he didn't.
He didn't.
Right.
Okay, maybe.
I don't get your playing cards analogy.
Well, I'm just saying.
At all.
The best hand wins.
Well, the best hand wins, but that has nothing to do with what happened in the baseball game. I understand that the best hand wins in a card game. I don't understand how it applies to this.
Well, I meant was if you bring one player in and bring another player in, it's kind of like a hand cards, who you bring in to whether you get an ace or a king.
Right, and the batter that the Tampa Bay Rays had against Brett Cecil was a 3. If you're making a card analogy.
Okay, no, that's fair. That's fair enough.
But he got a hit.
Yeah,
it happened.
And that's fair enough, Mike. But do you not agree, though? How can we talk about winning division, be a playoff team, and we continuously lose to this team? We had a rough time last year against Houston. You cannot keep losing these games if you want to win a division or a playoff shot. We just can't.
That's not true. They've won 4 out of 5 against the team that won 96 games and won the division last year.
Yep.
So that's lovely.
Yep.
They've had a hard time with Tampa Bay. It's true. They've had a hard time with Tampa Bay. They're a game and a half out of first place.
I agree.
Or a game out. So the fact that they're 1-5 against Tampa Bay Rays so far by no means means that they can't be a playoff team or they can't win a division. I mean, I understand that people like to say stuff like that, but there's just no basis in fact for it. There just isn't. And no, John Gibbons did not get outmaneuvered by Kevin Cash. The players that John Gibbons brought in to get the job done did not get the job done. That's what happened. As much as we love to deify coaches and say they're brilliant when teams win and they're idiots when teams lose, it comes down to the performance of the players. And if you put in a player who should perform and he doesn't, or he gives up a ground ball that gets through the infield, I honestly don't know how you can blame a manager. 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell. Long distance is 1-888-666-0590. We will get to more of your calls in a second. But first, let's hear from the skipper. Here's what John Gibbons had to say about today's 4-2 loss to the Rays.
Norris was so good tonight. That's, I'm sure, one that you'll probably feel like he deserved to get a W in tonight.
Yeah, he was great. You know, and a good bounce back effort for him, you know, after he struggled his last couple and you know, he hit the dead arm. I thought he could see early on. Well, you know, I think maybe the third, fourth inning, he really started kicking in and he looked like he loosened up and did a tremendous job. Yeah, you know, you know, it's only a one-run game, but you know, you feel good. They're dangerous.
Gibby, it seems this is always sort of the house of horrors for this team.
Yeah, what are you going to do? It's on the schedule. You got to play here, right? Play better. They outplay you. They pitch us. I mean, you know, they got a great approach, and they execute their pitches. You know, that shuts down their offense pretty good. We've never seen it really hit a lot here either, so... You know, move on. Tomorrow's a new day.
Yeah, that's runs in three of the past four outings for Castro. Do you think that it's either guys are maybe sensing his approach more, or is it just that he falls behind and then gets himself into trouble?
Yeah, let's be fair to the kid. He's been pretty damn good. You know, he's a baby. He's done a good job. He's closed out some games for us. It's a big leaks, man, you know. But, I like everything he's done, but he's going to give up hits every now and then. But we're going to need outside all the guys out of the pen. We really do. You know, it's a young group for the most part, and you're going to have your pains.
I mean, you bring in Brett, and he gets the ground ball, but it finds a hole. Is that what just seems to always happen here?
No, it's called good hitting. You know, he put it in play. DeJesus a tough out. You know, he... primarily a platoon guy, so we felt good about it. You know, the last couple of years he turned into platoon hitter, but he's, you know, he battles you. I was with him in Kansas City. He's a tough out, you know, and he put it in play. You know, that's where you know, hopefully you get a strikeout, which contacts your enemy. But, you know, I tip my hat to Dave, and found that hole.
John, do you have to think about how you approach the bullpen from now on? Or are you going to?
No, come on, man, give us a break. You know, I mean, it's one night. Why would it? You know, when I came, you think in a matter of 10 minutes I'd come in here, screw this? No, that's not fair to anybody.
On the ball, was there some dispute about fan interference or something about that?
No, we thought third base coach touched the runner.
Oh, okay.
And you're not allowed to do that, but you can't review it, you know. I didn't see it. I was told, they said, hey, he touched him, you know, trying to speed him up, you know, just, you know, thinking that maybe it wasn't a home run, you know. So... but you can't review that, they said, so.
What was the ruling on the catcher's interference?
There wasn't. They got together. So, you know, he hit the bat first, and then he touched it. I don't even think thought he hit his glove, so.
All right, so there's John Gibbons, and he says he's not going to make any changes to the bullpen. Not fair. After one game, although it really has been two for Miguel Castro, and who knows? Again, it's like I was talking about with that caller. I'm the first one people call right after the game is over. Same thing with John Gibbons. He hasn't had time to really sit down and think about it, and we'll see. I'm interested to hear his interview with Jerry tomorrow before the game, our pregame show at 12:30, to find out. But we'll see if Miguel Castro gets a save opportunity again tomorrow. He's been quite good. His last two outings, though, have been pretty rough, and today he gave up two big, loud doubles to turn a 2-1 Blue Jays lead into a 4-2 Blue Jays loss to the Tampa Bay Rays. Blue Jays talk continues. Ian is in Hamilton. Hey, Ian.
How you doing, Mike?
All right, thank you.
Yeah, good. That was a really well-played game. You know, despite the loss, it was... It was a good game. But these things are going to happen. And if I heard correctly, John Gibbons is echoing what you said. Brett Cecil has to make the pitches and get the left-hander out. And it's almost laughable with these with Toronto baseball fans. They're panicking. It's so early in the season. There's so much baseball yet to play. And, you know, if Gibbons had left the kid in Osuna and, you know, Tampa Bay got the big hit off of him, you would have had a ton of callers calling in saying, why didn't you bring in Cecil?
It's true.
So
you're absolutely right. I don't think he was saying Cecil's got to get the guy out. He said DeJesus is a tough out, and he got them. But yeah, you're right. Had Osuna given up a hit to DeJesus and then Loney gotten a hit off of him, back-to-back lefties, the board would be lit up with people screaming, why didn't John Gibbons bring in Brett Cecil?
Absolutely.
So, you know, sometimes it works. Sometimes, you know what they say, right? Sometimes you're the windshield and sometimes you're the bug.
Yeah, Mike, you really have to look at the glass full here. That was a great performance by Norris, and that should be exciting for fans to, if we get another top-notch left-handed starter, that's a real luxury. So that's exciting. That was fantastic.
You got to turn the radio down. You can't listen to yourself. It'll confuse the heck
out
of you.
Sorry, Mike, I'm outside here. Mike, a little off-topic. I wanted to ask you a question about the knuckleball with Dickey. Is it easy for a hitter to pick up a fastball from a knuckleball pitcher, seeing as the grip is so different? And I'll hang up to what you have to say.
It is.
Thanks.
Okay, no problem. Yes, absolutely. And not because of the grip, but because you see the ball floating in. But the thing with the knuckleball is if it's a good one, there's really nothing you can do about it. If it's not, you're going to crush it, like what happened to R.A. Dickey last night. But far more often than not, he's successful. But yeah, as soon as the ball leaves the pitcher's hand, you know whether it's a knuckleball or not. But if it's a fastball, you may not have time to react. And especially if you're sitting knuckleball, which you should every single time R.A. Dickey throws a pitch. But the way a knuckleball floats in there, yeah, absolutely, you know. Mark in Caledonia. Hello, Mark.
Mike, I think what fans are forgetting here is that this was to be expected with this bullpen. I mean, they are depending on a lot of rookies and journeymen who just aren't going to get the job done. Management didn't go out and get the veterans needed to solidify this bullpen.
Well, who were the veterans that you wanted?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of guys on the market there. Management just, or ownership, I should say, didn't want to spend the money. You got Papelbon out there he could get for a song. They don't want to add him.
No, I wouldn't want to add him either.
You would rather have the guy you have currently over Papelbon?
I would rather have Osuna, Castro, Cecil, Loop, Hendricks over Papelbon, yes.
Really?
Yeah, Papelbon's been...
I think you might be alone in Toronto on that one, but okay.
Well, the Blue Jays seem to agree with me, so I'm not completely alone.
What has Cecil been doing this year, Mike, to make him a mainstay in that bullpen?
Cecil's been very good far more often than not.
Or what's his ERA?
I don't know. I know he's had two bad outings. Has it been two? Yeah, I think he's had two bad outings. That's what I know about Brett Cecil.
And these young guys are depending on closing out games. I mean, they just don't have the mental makeup at this time. They're young pitchers. They're not expected to close at this point in time.
Have you spoken to either one of them? What do you know about their mental makeup?
Well, Mike,
what a ludicrous statement.
A young pitcher is getting their... I don't know about their mental makeup.
Well, you just said...
More times than not, a young pitcher does not have the mental makeup to be a closer. That's a veteran role.
Let's not make determinations on pitchers' mental makeup. And I don't know that it's necessarily a veteran role. Mariano Rivera was a closer in his second year in the major leagues. A lot of guys close very early. Everyone talking about Steve Delabar coming back to be the closer. He doesn't even have a full season. He has one season in the majors. Brett Cecil,
Mariano Rivera, you're picking one guy out of 1,000.
Yeah, because he's the only one who comes to mind. There have been plenty of young closers in the game. I'm not saying that Miguel Castro, if you listened earlier, I said I'd be fine if he's not the closer tomorrow.
But, you know, Mike, I not agree, but by ownership not going out and getting a closer, I mean, fans should not be surprised that this team is faltering at 500. They can't get it done.
This team is not faltering. This team has had
500.
Yeah, they're 9-9. And they've gotten no contribution at all, almost, from Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion. And they're still
and
leading
like
the major leagues.
In runs aren't the problem. They're scoring enough runs.
They didn't score enough tonight. They didn't score enough tonight. They didn't score enough in the three games they lost to Tampa Bay, aside from the fact that when a team loses a game, it never scores enough runs. But in the three games that they lost at home to Tampa Bay, what'd they score? A total of 5 runs?
And Bautista, unless they're going to learn to pitch, aren't going to help the pitching staff. So
you are absolutely correct.
Runs with or without those guys. So that's not the problem. The problem is that the shoddy bullpen can't get it done.
The problem is not that the shoddy bullpen can't get it done. And I appreciate the call. The problem has been the starting pitching. The starting pitching was wonderful tonight, and the bullpen didn't get it done. But Jonathan Papelbon is not the answer. It appears as though Rafael Soriano is not the answer. If he was a bullpen savior out there on the free market, someone somewhere would have brought him in. The Blue Jays weren't going to spend the money on David Robertson or Andrew Miller or Pat Neshek or Luke Gregerson. And I don't think they should have. I think they're going to be fine with this bullpen. And Brett Cecil, yes, in 8 outings, has had 2 in which he's given up a run. And today was not a bad outing. Today he faced a hitter and he got a ground ball, and it was hit in the wrong place. It wasn't even a hard hit ground ball. So 6 outings, 2 of them poor, the rest of them outstanding. I mean, I understand that everybody wants to crap on the bullpen. The bullpen's not the reason that the Blue Jays are 9-9 right now. The Blue Jays have lost 2 games this season as a result of a blown save by the bullpen. Take a quick break. When we come back, more of your phone calls. And Jim Fanning passed away today. One of the all-time greats. We will talk to Jonah Carey with him later on as Blue Jays Talk continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Blue Jays Talk with Mike Wilner should be called Blue Jays Talk with you, because it can't be Blue Jays Talk without you. Call in after the game on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Kicks, fires, the pitch hit into right center field deep. Long run Steve Souza. He's going back. Souza looking up, and there she goes. A home run the other way for Russ Martin. And the Blue Jays soar out in front 2-1 here in St. Pete at Tropicana Field.
Those are the good old days there. Russ Martin in the top of the 7th inning leads off with a home run. And cool that Russ Martin goes deep in a game, the first game in history in which there were 3 Canadians in the starting lineup, 3 Canadian position players in the starting lineup of a Major League Baseball team. Martin from East York, Ontario, grew up in Montreal. Pompey from Mississauga. Saunders from Victoria, BC. But it was not to last. Blue Jays fall 4-2 to the Tampa Bay Rays. I'm Mike Willing. We're taking your calls. And we'll be joined by Jonah Carey in 5 or 10 minutes. John is in Toronto. John, you're on Blue Jays Talk on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Hi, Mike. Thank you. I have a comment and a confession and a question. I'll start with the comment. It's my fault the Jays lost today.
No, it is not.
Because every time I turn on the radio,
no, it's not true.
When they're playing Tampa Bay, things unravel. So I apologize.
Thank you.
The fans.
Can you please use your powers for good if you're magic? Can you,
I won't listen tomorrow.
End famine or something instead of just making the Blue Jays lose games?
I'm sorry. I'm doing my best here.
All right.
My question is, and actually another comment, I love your show, and I think you, Jerry, Joe, are just great, and I really appreciate the great work you do. My question to you is, what is it? Is it the water in Tampa Bay? what's going on here? Why, first of all, do you know what the Jays' record against Tampa Bay is, say, over the last 2 or 3 years, their comprehensive record?
Not good.
Not good. any ideas why?
Yeah, because they keep losing to them.
There you go. That's like me in the radio. It may be me in the radio, so I'll try that tomorrow.
Okay.
And
if the Blue Jays win tomorrow,
you'll know I'm not listening.
I'll know you. You still need to know that you're not magic.
Okay. Actually, it's not even that I listen. It's just that today, for instance, I had to work. I turned it on in the eighth inning, you know, 30 seconds before the game tying double. So it's always at those moments when they seem to turn it on against Tampa Bay. So I will avoid that.
But you also don't notice all the times you turn it on.
All right. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Nothing bad happens. All right. Thank you for the call. Last year, the Blue Jays were 11-8 against the Rays and swept them in St. Petersburg. But the Rays were really bad last year. And, you know, you would have thought a good team would maybe be better than 11-8. The Blue Jays have been horrible against the Rays for years and years and years. Prior to last season, the last time the Blue Jays did not have a losing record against the Jays was 2007, when they went 9-9 against the Devil Rays. So the Blue Jays have only had one season with a winning record against the Tampa Bay Rays, and that was last year. Owen in Toronto, how you doing?
Oh, I'm good, Mike. How about you?
I'm all right, thanks.
All right, so just two questions for you. The first is more of a general question, but, you know, the Jays, Mike, past few seasons, I find it a little bit, I don't know, it's very, you know, I get excited before the season every year, and then all of a sudden, you know, I'm not quite sure. I think the start was kind of what I'm expecting. But my question is, you know, near September when, you know, meaningful baseball is what we all want here in Toronto, do you think the Jays, like, what do you think we're going to be like in the next couple months? Like, I obviously know that's a very general question, Mike, but I'm just wondering what you think the future holds for this season, in your opinion.
I have no idea. That's why I like actually watching, because it's fun to watch a season unfold instead of, you know, and I know that whether it's talk radio or whatever, everybody always wants to know what's going to happen. And a lot of people get paid a lot of money for their ability to tell people what they think is going to happen over the course of a few months. And all those people are wrong almost all the time.
Right. Okay, that's good. And then another question, you know, I know a lot of the fans have been a little bit negative today, so this is a little bit off topic. It's actually a little bit of like a different type of question, but I don't know if you heard of the app MLB Beat the Streak. Are you?
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Okay, so I'm not doing very well on that, and, you know, I don't expect to win $5.6 million, but it'd be nice.
It would be.
Very, right. Who do you think for tomorrow's games, if you know, like, I don't know how many teams are playing tomorrow.
Everybody's playing tomorrow. It's Sunday.
Okay, so who do you think, if I were to take one or two players to get a hit, would be a good idea?
I have no idea. What I would suggest that you do, right? honestly, and you know what? You got to have to do a lot of work and still have a lot of luck.
Right.
But $5.6 million is worth a lot of work.
Right.
You have to look at every single game and every single starting pitcher and what they've done in their history against every single batter who could be starting in that game, and you find the two guys who have the best track records against that starting pitcher, and you play them.
Okay. Yeah, honestly, it's very tough, but, I mean, I guess it's worth it.
Yeah.
Anyways, thanks, Mike.
All right.
Have a good night, and talk to you soon.
Thank you. I appreciate the call.
Yeah.
It is Blue Jays talk, and we will continue to take your calls right up to 10 o'clock, but we are going to be joined by Jonah Carey in a minute to talk about the passing of Jim Fanning. While we get Jonah on the line, he's in some press box somewhere. I just want to just give a little primer on some stuff that I'm seeing on Twitter, because every time blown saves are brought up, it gets to be a thing because nobody really understands what a blown save is and when a blown save can happen and all that stuff. Somebody said to me, the Blue Jays bullpen has 3 blown saves but only 4 saves, so that's terrible. And it would be if that was how it was actually measured. But the truth is, You can blow a save, and I know I'm going to blow some minds on this one. And honestly, this is true. Don't call me and tell me that can't happen. This is true. You can blow a save in the first inning. So it doesn't have to be the ninth. The Blue Jays have three blown saves this year. Two of them happened in the eighth. One of them happened in the ninth. They won one of the games in which they blew a save. But you can blow a save as far back as the first inning. So if you want to look at total opportunities, you have to look at all the holds that they've had, all the times a pitcher came in what would have been a save situation had he finished the game and got through it, because each one of those is an opportunity to blow a save. So they're not 3 out of 7. The bullpen hasn't been as bad as you think it's been. And I haven't added it up, how many actual opportunities where someone could have blown a save and didn't. But I will, and I'll let you know what that is. Again, we'll take more of your phone calls soon. But first, we go to Jonah Carey of Grantland.com. I was going to say, Jonah, that you're in parts unknown, but then I figured I could also ask you where you are.
I'm at the press box in Coors Field.
Ah, Coors Field in Denver, where the Rockies and Giants are tied 2-2 in the bottom of the fifth on the Sportsnet out-of-town scoreboard.
Company man, well done. That's true.
Thank you. Thank you. I hope you're enjoying the game. Obviously, you know why I called you. Jim Fanning passed away today, Canadian Baseball Hall of Famer, manager of the Expos in their playoff run in 1981, GM as well, and a long-time great front office figure. I didn't know him well, but he filled in for Alan Ashby as our color analyst for four games a few years ago, and it was just such an incredible experience to sit there and talk baseball for 4 days with Jim Fanning. What are your memories?
Yeah, you know, I've only been a full-time baseball writer for 4 years, which seems crazy, but so I just didn't have an extended history with him either. I only knew him mostly as a fan, but reporting on Up, Up, and Away, the book that I wrote about the Expos, I got to talk to him at length, actually. Met his son and a whole bunch of things. And fascinating, fascinating man. Lots of great stories. And this wasn't that long ago. And, you know, he was well into his 80s when we talked. But very, you know, very crisp memory of all kinds of stuff. And there were some wild stories. I mean, he was the initial, more or less general manager, I guess, at the beginning of the club, or at least held the de facto role. He and John McHale kind of ran the team starting in 1969. And it was a bare-bones front office. They were charged with hiring scouts and just building a staff out of nothing. They had about 3 months to figure this out, and it was the wrong time of year, so they had to go hire, basically retire scouts because every other scout was committed to another team. And the slapdash way that they put it together but made it work was quite incredible, to the point where there was a lot of snow in Montreal in 1969 leading up to the first home opener. So much snow, such bad weather, and everything was being done so last minute that the night before and then the morning of the first game at Jerry Park ever, they had the grounds crew and really everybody, office staff, whatever, setting up folding chairs in the stadium because they didn't have enough seats. They just hadn't finished building the stadium. And alongside the grounds crew and you know, a lot of the kind of rank and filers, putting 6,000 folding chairs up was Jim Fanning, who was ostensibly in charge of the franchise. I like to imagine Billy Beane doing this in Oakland today, or Brian Cashman. That kind of makes me laugh.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. And, you know, we don't hear stories about Paul Beeston or Peter Bavese shoveling the snow on the Blue Jays opener in 1977. But that opening front office, that was McHale and Fanning and Mel Didier too, right?
Yeah, Mel Didier, who I did get to meet last year. Of all places, you know, the exhibition games that happened, and I was walking out with a Montreal media friend of mine, and he was just standing there. He was just in the concourse, you know, kind of in the walkway leading up to the stadium. I guess he was waiting for his wife or something. And my buddy goes, "That's Mel Didier." And I go, it was like meeting 55 Larry Walkers, you know, it was just this amazing thing. And that brain trust was pretty incredible. Didier, I also got some great stories from him for the book as well. I think my favorite was that the Expos tried to corner the market on Cuban ballplayers and almost succeeded because Mel Didier made friends with Fidel Castro, because Canada didn't have a problem with Cuba. And so it would look like it was going to happen, that the Expos were going to get every Cuban ballplayer was just going to become an Expo because that's how it was going to be. And Castro, you know, thought it was a pretty good idea and was on board, and then went back and talked to his brain trust and said, you know, basically, Mel, I like you a lot, but I guess this would kind of be go counter to the stuff that we're trying to do here in Cuba, so we're going to go against it. But it was really amazing the innovative things that all those guys were trying to do. You know, Mikel coming in, he had been with the Tigers organization and he'd done some good things, and he was kind of running the big administrative stuff. And it really was Fanning and Didier, just all the player acquisition and trying to build a farm system or whatever. It was ostensibly the two of them trying to make it happen, which is, you know, it would take 10 or 20 or 40 people in today's game to do it, and they were doing it almost all themselves.
With Jonah Carey here of Grantland.com and the author of Up, Up, and Away, this the subtitle of which I don't remember because it was way too long.
Too long.
Something about Vlad and Expos and something. And we're remembering Jim Fanning. So we fast forward from 68-69 to 1981, and Jim Fanning takes over for Dick Williams in the second half, though, in September, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was really in September. I think it was mid-September or something. He only managed something like 15 regular season games.
What did you think when something like that happened?
Well, I mean, I was 6 years old or whatever, but I mean, after the fact, looking at it, it was a strange thing because Dick Williams came in with a lot of fanfare and really was a good manager. But there had been some strained relationships, including with Steve Rogers, who was the ace of the staff. They were basically near blows almost all the time, those two guys. And, you know, there was a feeling of expectations right after the 1979 season, in which they won 95 games. John McHale comes out and he says, this is going to be the team of the 80s. He wasn't the only person that said that. Sporting News said it. Sports Illustrated said it. It seemed like it was destined to be the team that was just going to run roughshod over the rest of the league. They were so talented. They'd come so close in 79. They basically only lost because the Pirates, you know, beat them a couple games. But it just seemed that way. And so when it wasn't working, 79 goes by and 80. Again, they have a great team, but they just fall short to the Phillies. And then 81, they got the split season, and they're frankly not that good for the talent that they have, or at least the record's not that good. And they pulled the plug. They just said, this is no good. You know, we need to be winning stuff. And there was a feeling that they could try to sneak their way into the playoffs if they could just get a little spark. And they bring in Fanning. You know, listen, Fanning was not the best manager. He hadn't managed in 20 years. He was a great baseball man. He was a great GM. He was a great scout. But he wasn't really ideally suited to that job, to be honest with you. But I think it's one of those things where maybe the combination of just kind of getting out from under the yoke of Dick Williams helped Steve Rogers, and he pitched really well from that point on. And maybe just a little bit of random chance. You know, it just happened that they won a few games from that point on. And if you want to give Fanning some credit, you can. And it did work out, and they did make the playoffs. And, you know, famously, of course, came one game, really one swing away from making the World Series, and there was a lot of debate about that. Had Fanning used the right pitcher by using Steve Rogers against Rick Monday and so forth, and you could debate these things ad infinitum, but, you know, I think that it was one of those things where it was a change of pace. Fanning was a way, way more mild-mannered guy than Dick Williams, and that seemed to be, you know, if nothing else, just that having that change probably helped that ball club a little bit.
It is kind of amazing, though, and, you know, we're talking about Jim Fanning, who passed away today at the age of 87. When you think of the career that he had in the game, and you talked about it, building an organization, scouting, all of that stuff, he is probably known more for the less than 40 games that he managed in 1981 than for any of that other stuff.
Yeah, which I guess is sort of how baseball goes, right? You know, we put the blame or the credit on this handful of people. You know, I've been asked, you know, various times, hey, who do you think is the best GM in baseball? Who's the worst GM in baseball? And the answer to that is that's impossible to answer because it's not like, again, name your GM, Alex or Billy Bean or whatever. It's not like they're doing it by themselves. They have scores of people crunching data and scouting and doing all these things, and it's all part and parcel. And, you know, the same goes to some extent for a manager's job, where you certainly have a staff of coaches. And even beyond that, it's ultimately the players that are going to make you look good or bad for the most part. Most managers don't make a huge difference one way or the other. And, yeah, to me, Fanning's legacy is much more being in there from at the beginning in 1969, that it was John McHale and Jim Fanning against the world. That's it. That's all they had. And they do hire Didier eventually and a couple other guys, Danny Menendez. But it's really them. And just to build a franchise out of nothing is a much bigger deal than, oh, he happened to manage a few games when they made the playoffs. You know, maybe they could have hired somebody else and they would have made the playoffs too, having gotten rid of Dick Williams. It's possible. I don't know. But I just thought that the scouting and the general body of knowledge and being able to shepherd a team from nothing into, not like they were reeling off World Series. They, of course, never won at all. But to have built such a good farm system, you know, to bring up Carter and Cromartie and Valentine and Dawson and Raines and Wallach and Rogers and all these guys, Fanning deserves a lot of credit for that. And that, to me, is not only Fanning's lasting legacy, but I think it's the Expos' lasting legacy. You know, we know that they never won at all. You know, they ultimately disappeared. But when I think of this team, I just think of all the great young players that came through there. And you need to have good minds to find those players and sign them and make them successful in the big leagues. And Jim Fanning played a big part in all of that.
Yeah, absolutely true. With Jonah Carey, we got a couple of minutes left. So I want to ask you, outside the Jim Fanning legacy, which you summarized beautifully, I have to tell you, the Montreal Expos were the first team in Major League history to have three Canadians in the starting lineup. They did it twice in 1993 with Denny Boucher and Joe Siddall and Larry Walker. And tonight, the Blue Jays became the first team in Major League history to start three Canadian position players in the same game with Russ Martin, Dalton Pompey, and Michael Saunders. I don't want to call you an expat, even though you live in Colorado. I know how much Canada means to you still.
Sure.
How much does that mean to you to see something like that? And you know what? Should Jeff Francis ever get a start, you got four.
Oh, that would be amazing. Yeah, it was a cool thing, you know, at the exhibition games when Russ is in, first of all, his dad does the anthem on the saxophone, which was just amazing. And Russ comes out and then finally in the second game, his dad is the one who comes out of the dugout and you know, kind of indicates to Russ, okay, come out of the game, and there's a standing ovation. And, you know, that stuff resonates. You know, I think in Russ's case, obviously him being from Montreal is even more hyper-local for me and for Quebecers. But I think there's a Canadian thing absolutely matters a lot. And the fact that every single winter somebody brings up a Joey Votto trade rumor, even though Russ aren't trading Joey Votto to Toronto. I don't think that's happening now or anytime soon. But it doesn't matter because it's compelling to think about. And I think that's a neat thing, different than hockey. You know, it's a given if you're going to have a lot of Canadians on your team if you have a hockey team, and you know some of them will inevitably be from Toronto or Mississauga or Hamilton or somewhere nearby. But it's still, as much as Baseball Canada has advanced and there's been some great players over the years, it's still pretty rare. And to have that confluence of players, not just players, by the way, really good players. Russ can play. Saunders is a good all-around ball player, and Pompey's got some nice potential, too. This isn't a charity case where they're like, oh, yeah, let's put this in as a publicity stunt or whatever. These guys are going to be counted on to win ball games for the Blue Jays. I think it's great. I think it's a tribute to the advances that have been made in Canada in terms of developing quality talent and, you know, it's a good job by the Jays to pick up players of that caliber.
Thank you, Jonah. I always appreciate it. Anytime something Expos-related, you're always willing to come on and help us out. So always appreciate your time. Enjoy the rest of the ball game in Denver, and thanks a lot for this.
More than that, anytime Mike Wilner calls, I answer. That's the bottom line.
You're a fine young man. There he is. It's Jonah Carey of Grantland.com and the author of Up, Up, and Away, the wonderful, wonderful history of the Montreal Expos. Jim Fanning, who basically built that team from scratch with Mel Didier and John McHale, passing away today at the age of 87. If you want to go visit the Canadian Baseball Hall of Fame in St. Mary's, Ontario, he's got a plaque there. We're back tomorrow, 12:30 p.m. Eastern, for a 1:10 first pitch. Blue Jays will try to beat back the Brooms. Mark Burley on the mound against Chris Archer. Thanks for all your calls. Sorry to those of you to whom we could not get. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Roger Lajoie is up next.